Welcome to Pick Up and Deliver, the podcast where I pick up my audio recorder when I get off the train and deliver a show to you while I walk home. I'm Brendan Riley. Well, welcome to Pick Up and Deliver. Today is a lovely February day here in suburban Chicago. The temperature is in the low 30s, but the ground is clear and dry because it was 60 yesterday, so all the snow melted. However, it was also very rainy yesterday. And so this is attempt number two at this episode because I recorded attempt number one while I was walking home in the rain and I had an umbrella. And I was hoping it would sound sort of quaint. Instead, it just sounded terrible. Every car that drove by was super loud and the umbrella was super loud, and I decided it was too loud to tolerate. So you won't get to hear that, although maybe I'll cut in. I'm going to drop in a little bit of that episode right now so you can hear what it sounded like. I'll use it to introduce the subject for today. So I wanted to talk today about my shelf of opportunity. Some people call this a shelf of shame, as in I'm ashamed that I haven't played these games and I'm still buying more. I like the phrase shelf of opportunity because for me, these are games I have the opportunity to play. I've bought them, they're in my collection, I can play them whenever I feel like taking the time to read the rules. So it's an opportunity for an exciting bit of gameplay. So in case you couldn't understand that because it was too loud, today's subject is going to be the shelf of opportunity. So if you're like me, you enjoy collecting games almost as much as you enjoy playing them. My game collection is something I take pride in, I guess. I don't know that it gives me as much pride as many, many other things in my life, but I certainly enjoy it, and I like curating a set of games that provide a wide variety of experiences and possibilities for me, in the same way that I curate an interesting bookshelf and an interesting music collection. Of course, games are interesting because they have this extra element of the potential for social contact and community that I find so pleasurable about them. However, when you have a fairly large collection of games, and mine is somewhere in the neighborhood of 350 games, I would say, you get to the point where you aren't able to play all the games you have very often, or maybe not even at all. And so some gamers have come to call the pile of games that you have that you haven't played yet your shelf of shame, as in you should be ashamed of yourself. You bought this game, you haven't played it, you're probably buying more games, you still haven't played the games you have. That's pretty negative in my view. I don't like approaching the world with that kind of negativity. So instead of shelf of shame, I like to call my pile of unplayed games my shelf of opportunity. I think that I got that phrase from the podcast of Nonsensical Gamers. I believe they used that phrase, but I'm stealing it. So my shelf of opportunity. What I wanted to talk about today was how does the game end up in my shelf of opportunity? So there are some games that I get and I play them right away. A good example, this weekend we got Stuffed Fables. I had pre-ordered it through Miniature Market, love their pre-order system, and it finally showed up and we played it within 2 days of it arriving. I never even had time to add it to the geek list I keep that details my shelf of opportunity. If you're interested in that, I will put a link to it in the show notes over at rattleboxgames.com for this episode. How does the game get onto my shelf of opportunity? What is it that causes me to buy a game and then not play it pretty quickly? Usually, if I have a game more than a week without playing it, I put it on the shelf of opportunity. So I looked at the shelf and I figured out the list. I don't actually keep them all in one shelf. Maybe that would be a good way to shame myself into playing them, but I don't do that. I looked at the list and I picked out four kind of main categories for how a game gets onto my shelf of opportunity. And I'm going to go in reverse order of size. So the first category I'll introduce is the category that has the least number of games in it and so on up the chain. So the first way or reason that a game would end up in my collection and not get played is that it is a collectible game. I have a few games that I've bought, not that I don't want to play them, but I bought them not because I'm interested in them as a game, but more because I'm interested in them as an object to own. In particular, I have five games that I would point to that fit this category. The first one is the Murder, She Wrote board game. There's a board game from the mid-80s that has a cartoon Jessica Fletcher on the cover, and it's Murder, She Wrote themed. I had to have that when I found it on eBay. Similarly, I also have a Columbo-themed board game, though the Columbo game is just a reworking. I've read somewhere it's a reworking of another game. I think it's called Sleuth, which I haven't played. But it's got Columbo, it says Columbo on the cover, and then it's got a picture of Columbo character from TV facing away from the viewer looking at the box. So it's Columbo looking away and kind of raising his hand questioningly. I think so they didn't have to pay Peter Falk for his image rights. Then the next one I have the early 2000s Buffy the Vampire Slayer board game. Now there are two mass market board games of Buffy the Vampire Slayer that were made. One of them is apparently terrible and the other one's pretty good. It's the pretty good one that we have. We bought it at a garage sale. We haven't tried it yet, but I'm excited to try it at some point, but still mostly got it as a collectible. Then finally, the last two games I have are both there because I am an enthusiast or an interested reader about the Titanic. As a cultural moment, the Titanic fascinates me, and so I've read quite a few books and seen all the movies, and I enjoy learning about what happened on that ship. And there are several board games actually that are about the Titanic, but two of them that are available. One is called Titanic. It was released around the time of the James Cameron movie, and it's a pretty bad game, although I only know that from having read the rules. I haven't tried it, but it looks just really dull. And then the other one is called The Sinking of the Titanic. It was made in the 70s, and it's got a sort of swivel board where the ship actually tips at an incline, and then in the second half of the game, the players are in lifeboats. It's just a very strange idea to put into a game. But looks to be interesting. At some point I will play that, but mostly I have it because it's an interesting collectible. We also have a game from the 80s called like the Tower of the Wizard King that in which you put your figure in and it transforms into another figure. It's a weird looking game, but we have it partly because it looks neat. So those are some collectible games. I guess that's six of them. But that's the lightest version, or the lightest reason a game might end up in my collection. The next group are games that I've traded for. When I participate in a math trade, particularly a no-ship math trade, where I'm not spending any money, I'm just giving away games that I have, I generally am pretty loose about what games I will take, because my goal in putting a game up in the math trade is to get rid of it. So anything that I think might be better than the game I have, I'm willing to take. Now some of the games, like if I'm giving away a more valuable game, I will restrict that to something that I think is sort of worth it, but I'm generally pretty flexible. As a result, I have a bunch of games that I've gotten in trade that I just haven't gotten around to playing. There are a bunch of them. I will highlight a couple. I have the Travis Chance game Infamy. It looks like a kind of crime adventure game. That looks fun. And I have the Isaac Shalev game Ravenous River. It's a small box game from AEG that looks like it's inspired by the old riddle about the farmer with a pig, or with a chicken, a wolf, and a bag of grain. But I haven't gotten a chance to play that one yet. Again, because it was a trade. Also, sometimes end up in this category are games that are gifts, where it's a game someone gives you, maybe with a nice intention, but just isn't the kind of game you want to play, and you maybe feel bad about giving it away early on. I've gotten more aggressive about giving away games I don't want, but I still am a little hesitant. So the next category of games that have found their way onto my shelf of opportunity are games that were on sale. So I regularly look at Amazon, I'm ashamed to admit, and Miniature Market, which I'm not ashamed to admit, and I kind of browse their clearance section. And often I'll find a game that I've heard interesting things about, but have not gained too much traction on BoardGameGeek, but I think they'd be fun. And if they end up being pretty inexpensive, then I'm inclined to get them to try them out. Among the examples, I have some examples that I got. One of these actually is a very well-known game. I got it on Amazon Prime Day for a steal. And that's Notre Dame, a Stefan Feld game. I also have Moonga Invaders, a Martin Wallace game that's kind of goofy, but Interesting. I have Queen's Architect from and Lost Legends, both from Queen Games, and they seem to do their clearance on Amazon, and both of those I got for less than $15. Kingdom Builder, same thing. And I have games that I've bought at, like, used at Half Price Books or something, such as Stronghold 2nd Edition. These are all games that I actually am really interested to try. And any one of these, if someone came over and said, you know, I'd really like to try out Queen's Architect, I would say, absolutely, let's give it a go. But I just haven't gotten around to it. And I get them not when I have room in my life to play a new game, but rather because they were on sale. Most recently, I just picked up Hyperborea. For that same reason, it's a 4X fantasy game, was on sale really cheap, miniature market, and it's very well reviewed. It's just, it was really hot a couple years ago, and I think it's the fervor for it has died out. But my wife isn't going to be interested in 4X games about science fiction, but I might be able to get a fantasy game played. So that's part of why I picked up Hyperborea. Also, like I said, really cheap. But the main thing that puts a game on my shelf of opportunity is just that I bought the game because I was interested in it, and I buy more games than I have time to play. So I have a variety of games on there. I will list a couple highlights, games that I'm particularly sad I haven't played. Things like Terra Mystica and Orleans. I've played Orleans once, but it wasn't my copy, so I keep it on my shelf of opportunity to try to get it played. Robinson Crusoe. I have a bunch of Kickstarter games that came in that I never have played, like Apocrypha and The Miskatonic School for Boys, which is a social deduction game in the same genre, in the same universe as Miskatonic School for Girls, which is a game I like quite a bit. I have London, the Martin Wallace game. I got that a couple months ago and I haven't played it yet. I'm very excited to try it. And also Alexandria was a Kickstarter I backed, about the burning of the Library of Alexandria. All of those games I'm very excited to play. I just haven't gotten around to them yet, in part because I have too many. So this is just a way of sort of talking about and confessing, I guess, what it's like to have this shelf of opportunity. And I make an effort to play these games. Oftentimes I play them once to get them off the shelf, and then they go back on my game shelf and I don't play them again for a long time. I've recently, in the last year or so, moved toward a one-in-one-out policy. We have four Kallax shelves that are all 2x4. So it's 32 Kallax squares in our basement. And I use those as a way to... That's where we store the games. And I have some games on top and whatever. But there's really not room in our house for more than that. So I've kind of reached peak storage in that space, and so I am now moving toward a system where when I buy a new game, I have to, if I want to find room for it on the shelf, I have to get rid of another game. And so I've been starting to sell games that are games I like, but we're just not getting played. I'm sad to say I recently sold Fields of Green, which is a game I enjoyed quite a bit, but no one in my family would play it with me. So there's a certain point at which it's silly to keep. And so doing that both makes the purchase of future games less expensive because I'm buying them with games with money I got from selling other games, but also makes room for the new games I buy on our shelf. So what do you do to handle your shelf of opportunity? Do you play a game right when you get it? Do you have more restraint than I do and only buy games occasionally and make sure you play the heck out of them? Are you a collector? I think I'm going to do another episode later about collectors, so I'd be interested to know what questions do you have if you aren't one or you're just starting your game collection. Or I'd be interested to hear, how do you moderate your collection? When do you think the moment happens where you change how you're collecting games? All of these things I'd be interested to hear about. You can reach me on Twitter at Rattlebox Games or by email, brendan@rattleboxgames.com. There is a comment space on our blog where I keep the show notes for the show, or you can reach out to me on BoardGameGeek. My username there is wombat929. I'd be happy to hear from you. I frequent lots of different parts of it, but there is a space for this podcast on there. That would be the easiest way to reach me if you don't want to send me a geek mail message. Well, thanks for listening. I appreciate it. I hope that your next walk is as pleasant as mine was. Bye-bye.
Brought to you by Rattlebox Games.